Support for this podcast of The Exchange is brought to you by the Dagoba Group, a global diversity and inclusion consulting practice with specialties in unconscious bias, leadership dynamics, and client engagement. Authors of the book, The Inclusion Dividend. More at thedagobagroup.com.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, equal housing opportunity. And from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community. With convenient locations throughout northern New England, world-class providers are closer than you think. Visit DartmouthHitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Founded by two San Francisco friends less than a decade ago, Airbnb, a room and home sharing service, has grown more than 700%, is valued at $10 billion, and has listings in cities across the globe. But here in this country, especially in crowded urban areas like New York and San Francisco, where apartments are scarce and expensive, the explosion of Airbnb's popularity has caused a backlash. Some see these short-term rentals as displacing affordable housing for local people. Others say that too many Airbnb properties in residential areas interferes with the character of a neighborhood, and that companies like Airbnb and HomeAway have an unfair advantage over hotels because they're less regulated. Now, these same issues have made their way into New Hampshire, with bills addressing each issue at the state level. But even as some Granite Staters push for clarity on this, there's also excitement in the state about the opportunities that come with sharing economy companies, including the extra cash hosts can make and new options for tourists looking for a more authentic local experience. Today in The Exchange, a sharing economy shakeup. First, a look at short-term rental services like Airbnb, and then a little bit later, an update on another sharing economy company growing fast in New Hampshire, Uber. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. With me in studio, Bob Sanders, longtime reporter at New Hampshire Business Review. He's been doing a lot of reporting lately on Airbnb and Uber and other services like it. Bob, thank you for taking time out.
It's always great to be here.
Joining us by phone, Allison Griswold, reporter for Quartz, a digital business news publication from Atlantic Media. Allison also covers the sharing economy and other business and economy topics. And Allison, it's great to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And also joining us from UNH is Neil Nyman. He's an economics professor at the University of New Hampshire. And Professor Nyman, thank you for being with us as well. We appreciate it.
Hey, sure. It's my pleasure, Laura.
Well, Allison, I did want to start with you. Just for those who don't know how an Airbnb-type service works, there are probably still some listeners who've heard of this but have never used and aren't quite sure how it works. So just fill us in, Allison, please.
Sure. So Airbnb is what we call either a home sharing platform or an alternative lodging platform. Basically, it's an option you can use instead of a hotel. So people put their homes on it. You book a room or an entire home that someone else owns, and then it's sort of designed for usually like week or several day long stays.
And is it a lot cheaper than a regular hotel? I mean, what's the appeal, Allison?
The rates vary. It's often a lot cheaper, and Airbnb likes to sell the idea that you're sort of more immersed in the local community experience than you might be with a traditional hotel.
What is behind this explosive growth, Allison? I was looking at the numbers this morning, and it's pretty amazing. This company is not even 10 years old, and it's ginormous.
It is. It's valued at more than $25 billion. They have locations all around the world, you know, hundreds of cities. I think it's sort of filling a gap for people that have always wanted to travel more, maybe don't have the budget to stay in hotels, like the community experience. It's also giving people a chance to make some extra money by renting out rooms in their homes that maybe they aren't using full time.
Well, and my college roommate lives in Oregon, near the University of Oregon. Her daughter is now off to college, so she rents rooms, and it's always full, that room of hers. People come in for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and so forth. Bob Sanders, how popular is Airbnb here in New Hampshire?
It's getting popular. It's not as popular as some other places, but last time I looked, we have about 1,000 rooms active renters. The biggest city so far is North Conway, so it's getting big in the North Country. I think before it was Lincoln. Show the growth. Last time I checked, which was I think in January, it was around 800. So that's 20% in 3 months. That's might be some seasonal variations, but it is growing very quickly. I know now, and I'm sure a lot of other people do, when they book a hotel room in another city, some people, you know, they check Airbnb and regular listings. In fact, even Travelocity owns a company very similar to Airbnb. So it's becoming very competitive. A lot of people who are not young and hip are starting to use Airbnb.
Well, it's interesting. And a lot of people who aren't young and hip, Bob, are renting out rooms on Airbnb, you know, mother-in-law apartments, the room where the kids used to be and now they're away and grown and so forth.
Yeah, I actually, this goes into your affordable housing thing. I actually talked to one woman in Laconia, used to rent out a room, you know, rent out apartments to people, had a lot of trouble collecting rent. People were marginal, SSI, minimum wage, so forth. Airbnbs, she gets people from all over the world. You get paid in Airbnb as soon as they enter your room, basically, as soon as they're in your house. So you don't have to chase after rent and so forth. The rates are actually higher. And if you are filled up for, you know, which that's a big if, then you would make more money renting out your room and so forth.
Without some of the headaches.
Yeah, the one thing I should say is that a lot of people get the idea that Airbnb is just one room in your house. You know, you're renting out your kid's room and something. Actually, most Airbnbs are the full place, the full apartment, the full house and so forth. And in Conway, it's more than two-thirds that way. And in other cities in New Hampshire, it's like 70, 80% even.
Well, Bob, how have regular hotels and inns responded to this?
Well, they say that some ways Airbnbs are acting like hotels, like most closely like bed and breakfasts. And they wanted to put them on what they call as a equal playing field. Two issues there are taxes and local regulation, and there's some bills in that I think we'll go over in a little bit.
Yeah, in a couple minutes we'll talk to somebody who introduced a bill on that note, getting Airbnb rentals, especially those who are really deep in it, to pay what they call their fair share in rooms and meals taxes. But I want to turn to you too, Professor Nyman. How have home sharing services like HomeAway, like Airbnb, there's a couple others out there, how have they disrupted or upended traditional economic models?
Well, the traditional model is based on information access and information sharing. And so, you know, a useful service that a hotel provides is, you know, it's got an identity, you know what you're to expect. Typically, the rates are posted. You have a sense of the experience. It's easy to book, and it's easy to plan a vacation. In the past, you know, it's been very expensive to try and rent out an individual room in one's home, because how do you find a potential person, and how do you know that that person's okay, and how do you arrange the economic transaction, and who takes the payment, and so on and so forth. And so there are all these costs involved in sort of monetizing the part of your asset that you're not using. And so services like Airbnb make it really simple to rent out part of your home or your entire home, and they take all the fuss and the muss out of it and make it financially possible to do it.
Talk a little bit more about what you said. It's efficient use of an asset that somebody has already. So, you know, that little apartment is just sitting there, and all of a sudden you're using it.
Well, think of anything with an initial expenditure. It doesn't necessarily have to be an apartment. It could be a car. It could be a pair of skis. It could be a bicycle. It could be a camera. I mean, in some ways, if you take the idea or concept to its limit, it's anything that requires sort of a fairly substantial initial upfront cost that you're not using all of the time, you know, this creates the possibility of sort of lending it or sharing it with somebody else and recouping some of that initial investment back. It takes sort of a non-performing asset and it turns into a source of income for many people.
Allison, you've written about that, too. I'd love to hear from you on this. The idea that, you know, this is helping people who already have capital or assets and helping them make more money off of that asset.
Yeah, it's interesting. People tend to think of the sharing economy as one big thing that includes everything from Uber to Airbnb to TaskRabbit and all these companies. But there's actually sort of a distinction between the ones like Airbnb that we're talking about, where you take a physical asset like a room or a home and rent it out, and the ones like Uber where you're contributing your time or your labor. And so we talk about the former, the Airbnbs, as capital platforms, because they, again, capital as in assets. And those ones tend to be used by people who are a little wealthier. They already have the assets, and the money they make is usually supplemental income. So it's not money that they're using because they maybe lost a job or they had their hours cut back and they need to make it up. But it's extra money on top of whatever they were already bringing in.
Well, joining us now on the phone is someone who has been deeply involved in this issue. We're talking with Ett Butler. He's a Democratic state representative from Hart's location, sponsor of HB 1590, which addressed regulation of short-term rental businesses like Airbnb. And Representative Butler is also owner of the Notchland Inn in Hart's location. Representative Butler, welcome back to The Exchange. It's good to have you.
Thank you, Laura. Good morning.
Well, just remind us what your bill was aiming to do.
Well, initially, it would have required people who are renting through short-term rental businesses like Airbnb and HomeAway and FlipKey and those places to register as a business and then to pay their rooms and meals tax accordingly.
So register as a business and pay their rooms and meals tax accordingly. You were quoted in an article by one of our guests, Bob Sanders, as saying this was a, quote, very minimalist first step in trying to level the playing field. How unlevel, Representative Butler, is the playing field right now, in your opinion?
The only piece that I see as being lodging owner's perspective as being unlevel is the fact that these entities are able to operate without any regulatory oversight. Several years ago had to put in a fire suppression system. We are inspected regularly by the Department of Health. We have, you know, several pieces of regulatory oversight as an official lodging establishment, and we understand that those are reasonable for public protection and involvement.
So, sure, you want fire safety in your hotel. Yeah.
Of course, of course. However, none of these businesses functioning through Airbnb and the like are subject to any of that kind of oversight. The only thing that at this point makes sense to me, and I think lots of people who are in my shoes, is that these places ought to be paying their rooms and meals tax. As a state representative, I understand that the revenue is needed and could be very valuable in terms of having money that the state currently doesn't have because many of these places are not paying their rooms and meals tax. But also it will take away the difference in terms of not having to charge that pass-through if places do in terms of their rates.
So, Representative Butler, I have an email here from a listener named Steve who says, does New Hampshire require that rooms taxes be collected by the homeowner when a home is rented for a short term? Steve says, I suppose this would also apply to weekly winter mountain rentals as well as Seacoast weekly summer rentals. So does New Hampshire require rooms and meals taxes to be collected by folks who host on Airbnb?
The law already exists that if a place is rented under 6 months, which is, what, 180 days, and two non-related people, that rooms and meals tax is to be paid. The issue with these new short-term rental platforms is that they do not have the responsibility to require registration as a business or registration through the Department of Revenue Administration to have a rooms and meals tax license. And so, therefore, there is no way either that the person who's renting understands that they have to, that they have this responsibility, or nor is there a formal way of setting that up through those platforms.
So it's on paper, but it sounds like it's very little enforced.
Right. And this is not to say that there aren't people who are renting through these entities like Airbnb and HomeAway that aren't paying the rooms and meals tax. I know several people who are, but I also know several people who aren't.
Well, Senator David Booten, the chair of the committee that studied your bill, Representative Butler, said the legislature needs to take a comprehensive look at sharing economy businesses like people renting out rooms or apartments or homes on Airbnb. If that comprehensive look takes place, Representative Butler, what do you think it should include in addition to these rooms and meals taxes that you already mentioned?
Well, I'm hoping that this piece will move through the legislature now. There was a study committee last summer, and although it may not have taken a look as comprehensively as Senator Booten might like, it did come up with a couple of ideas, one of which was to require realtors to unbundle their reports when they send them to the DRA.
That's Department of Revenue Administration. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah,
exactly. You know, there are realtors who do short-term rentals for second home buyers, and they manage the rental and they send in the rooms and meals tax to the state. They're doing that in a bulk method, and the study committee recommended that those be unbundled so that the DRA has a better way of determining who's paying their taxes and who might not be.
All right. Well, Representative Butler, I don't think this is the last time we'll be talking about this. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bob Sanders, I know you covered this issue in the legislature. I'd love to hear a little bit about the push-pull, the different entities that Representative Butler alluded to.
Yeah, well, The other bill that he was just talking, there was a bill to unbundle it, and that's in the study committee along with another bill we'll talk about that Martha Fuller Clark put together. This was designed for a study committee. Actually, it was his bill. All it asked for, and this is what's very minimal about it, is just put the tax ID number that you're supposed to be paying, put it on your ad, and that got. That was considered, well, this is all this Airbnb legislation, so many moving pieces. That kind of attitude happened after one of the Home Alone, not Airbnb.
Home Away.
Home Away, right.
Home Alone's a movie.
Great movie, yeah. but a lobbyist for that stood up and said, we need a more comprehensive study. The committee at that point said, yeah, let's do that. I don't want to deal with this. But then there was a big debate on the Senate, and it did pass at least to the Finance Committee, which would put in the number. So it's kind of still moving along as a separate bill at this point.
I see.
But we're not sure where it's going to go.
Well, Allison, how often does this come up in other states that, you know, hey, okay, if you're going to be running an inn part-time, you at least need to pay rooms and meals taxes?
It comes up a lot. Airbnb is actually really interesting in terms of its approach to taxes, because a lot of the times what you see happen is Airbnb actively wants to pay taxes, whereas the city or the state or whomever doesn't want to let it. And the reason for that is that paying taxes, again, you might not think a company would want to pay taxes if it doesn't have to, but paying taxes is also a form of legitimizing a business. It sort of codifies it in a way that other things don't. And as Airbnb has tried to get its model accepted, it's pushed for that.
All right. Well, we will talk more in just a moment. Lots more to untangle with this. We'll take your questions and comments to the exchange number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Whether you host Airbnb, stay at Airbnb, or have some questions about the taxes and regulations, we'd love to hear from you. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the sharing economy in New Hampshire. We're looking at short-term rental services like Airbnb and their economic and community impacts. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send email to exchange@nhpr.org. Whether you stayed at an Airbnb property, whether you host an Airbnb rental at your house, or where they have some questions and concerns about the regulation or the taxation of these entities, give us a call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Allison Griswold, just before the break, you were talking about how on the taxation issue, you might think Airbnb wouldn't want its hosts to pay rooms and meals taxes. But in fact, you said the company is fine with that. Go ahead. I know you wanted to finish up there.
Sure. Yeah. So what I was saying is basically paying taxes is a form of legitimizing a business. And one place where this has been really controversial is in New York City, where you've seen on several occasions Airbnb make statements about how much money they could contribute to the city, how much the city is giving up by Airbnb not paying taxes. But on the other hand, you have local lawmakers who, for whatever reason, don't want to give Airbnb that form of acceptance and therefore have not thus far allowed it to pay taxes.
Interesting. And Professor Nyman, you know, you talked earlier about the economic disruption of the sharing economy, in this instance, Airbnb. From the business perspective, what about the regulators and the people who decide, you know, what the taxes are going to be? How much has this disrupted their work?
Well, Laura, it not only goes to room and meals taxes, but you could think it would extend to things like property taxes as well. If you're going to sort of turn your home into a part-time business, well, you know, should your property then be assessed at a different rate? Typically, commercial properties have higher assessments than residential properties. So, you know, is this going to, you know, sort of radically change the property tax system in the state of New Hampshire? Or you can think of other things. So, for example, my homeowner's insurance, it just covers my family and I living in our house. Now, if I'm going to have strangers coming here on a regular basis and somebody slips in the bathtub, does my homeowner's insurance cover that? I mean, it's not clear that other supporting industries have sort of caught up to this new business model. And when they do, you might see rates such as insurance radically change. And as a result, Airbnb's, you know, source of competitive advantage might start to disappear.
That's kind of what Representative Butler was hinting at. That's really interesting, and I had not thought about that. Go ahead, Bob Sanders. Anyone
want
to jump in?
There's another one, too, that the zoning is an issue, that if this is commercial, and this came up in the debate over the over Butler's bill, since the definition of an Airbnb or a short-term rental this type of short-term rental, called it a business, then would you have a business in a residential zone? Is that going to raise all sorts of problems so that by putting your tax ID on your ad, you are identifying that you are a business or admitting you're a business, and would that cause problems in terms of zoning? So that's one of the issues that were raised. But this is an issue. There was an audit done by the Department of Revenue Administration in New Hampshire, and this was several years ago, before the explosion. They said they were losing $1.5 million in terms of their audit of taxes by people not paying their taxes, and it's probably a lot larger now.
Wow, that's really interesting. So let's say, you know, once our kids have flown the coop, Bob, and, you know, we live close to downtown, so it's a nice area, and we decide to, you know, rent out their rooms to Airbnb, we might be disobeying Concord's zoning laws because now we're a business?
Well, the people who support Butler's bill say that's a red herring, that they say it's a residential. They define it as a business in a residential area, much like, you know, if you were selling some crafts or something, but still, it's something that is raised and that people are worried about,
and that I might have to change the way my property taxes are assessed because now again I'm running a business.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm planning on doing this. By the way, I'm just trying to use this as an example.
Well, the supporters say that kind of present Airbnb or these other groups are as just a room in your home, just some resident doing it.
Yeah, just something casual,
right.
Pick up a little cash.
But the arguments against it is that's maybe the way it started, and that's what maybe the way even most people are doing it. But the fastest growing part of the business is more commercial, is people renting out rooms and doing it for a living, sometimes even buying up, you know, apartment buildings that may be once rented to regular renters and renting them out as Airbnbs, running a hotel.
And I know that that's a concern given the shortage of rental housing for local people here in New Hampshire. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. But let's go to our listeners, all of you. Again, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Today, we're digging into the sharing economy, especially for the moment, home sharing services like Airbnb, HomeAway, and others like it. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to call with your questions, comments, personal experiences, concerns. 1-800-892-6477. You can always send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Jeffrey joins us from Portsmouth. Hi, Jeffrey. You're on the exchange. Welcome.
Hello. I'm calling from Portsmouth. And Portsmouth has a rather contradictory policy of just enforcing a zoning ordinance based on neighbor complaints. But they have a policy that it's under 30 days, they consider a short-term rental. Over 30 days, they consider a long-term rental. And whereas the state law for the room and meals tax is 6 months, and it just seemed to me that if you're doing like over a month, up to 6 months, you could be a boarder. Or if you suppose you had an apartment and somebody moved out in less than 6 months, suddenly you were subject to room and meals tax. So the 6 months seems like it's inappropriately applied to the Airbnb. The other question I had was related to the Senate Bill 156, I think it was, that says that a city cannot pass a zoning ordinance that disallows an accessory unit in a home. And I'm told that this would apply to Airbnb since it doesn't have to be to a relative or something like that. And so I was wondering if that's correct and what the status of Senate Bill 156 is.
What's your feeling, Jeffrey? I know that Airbnb has been especially debated in Portsmouth because housing is so expensive and so tight, especially in town. Plus, it's a nice, you know, tourist city, so people do want to use that extra space if they have it. What is your own personal feeling about the growth of Airbnb in your city?
Well, I suggested to the city council that they allow it in primary residence, whereas the Airbnb is a clearly secondary use, because I would agree with those who say you don't want people buying up apartment blocks as an investment property and using Airbnb as the way to balance the books and really making it a business in the neighborhoods. I agree with that. So that was my proposal. The city council here in Portsmouth debated it for a whole year and finally decided to do nothing, basically by inaction. So they left their policy in place where, you know, they're just enforcing it by neighbor complaint. And I would add that, I mean, I found myself the kind of like the head of the whole matter because we got one of the cease and desist letters.
Wow.
The cease and desist letter says, well, we're not allowed to run a bed and breakfast in our zone without a special exception.
Okay, so you're running an Airbnb. I shouldn't say running. I don't know what the extent of your business is, but you are hosting people under Airbnb, Jeffrey, and you got a cease and desist from the city?
Yeah, well, right now we're mostly doing monthly rentals because the city policy is over 30 days is not short term. That's not a written policy. That's a stated policy from the planning director. So, but what I was trying to say before was that our letter said we couldn't continue because we were a bed and breakfast in a neighborhood where it's not allowed without a special exception.
I see. Okay, and that's the issue that we talked about earlier. Bob, do you want to jump in?
Yeah. The bill, by the way, he was talking about, Martha Phil Clark, I think we'll discuss more fully. That's her bill. And that bill was in basically came out of the Portsmouth situation. And Portsmouth has been the hottest situation because housing is so tight. And basically they were thinking of excluding by zoning because that was the only – this is what I heard anyhow, that was the only legal way they could do it. Now, maybe that's not true, but that's what Clark was saying. And they said they don't want to do that. They don't want to have to try to to zone out Airbnbs because it's impossible to enforce, for one thing. So instead they're proposing some kind of way that localities can regulate, and I assume part of that might be your suggestion. Because right now, I guess she feels, or the city feels, they didn't have the authority to do that, and they went to the state to get that. Then there's a whole debate about how much authorities localities should have.
So there's sort of state regulations and local regulations, and right. It sounds like from Jeffrey, we're hearing that there's a conflict sometimes there.
Yes, that's the big – yeah, and the question is whether you're going to tell people what to do with their homes or – whether you're going to tell businesses how to run their business, that's always New Hampshire here.
Wow. Well, Allison, I'd love your perspective, having covered this in other cities. We just heard a real interesting story from Jeffrey, and he's trying to reach a compromise, but having a hard time.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not as familiar with Portsmouth, but you have a very similar situation in New York City, where the things at play are you have really constricted housing, rentals are incredibly expensive. And so on the one hand, you have housing activists who don't want Airbnb to do also what is called short-term rentals here, which is less than 30 days renting out the entire unit, because the concern is that you have landlords who will take their apartments and essentially turn them into permanent Airbnbs with lots of tourists coming through. And that takes more units off the housing supply, which, you know, basic economics, right? It lowers supply, which even if demand stays the same, will increase rents. And so that's been really, really controversial. You see similar things in San Francisco, where the city is now asking people who have Airbnbs to get business licenses and register as businesses.
Professor Nyman, are we going to see this in New Hampshire yet? I mean, we've done multiple shows on the lack of affordable housing, the lack of rental housing, especially for young people just starting out in their careers. Are we going to see some pushback towards services like Airbnb, given that people need rental housing to live here?
Right. Well, I think a lot of that has to do with the property tax system in New Hampshire. And that's, you know, it's one of the significant reasons why housing is so expensive in the state of New Hampshire. But I think the problem is also a quality of life issue. So, for example, I live on a river. It's a very desirable location. I could see my neighbors wanting to rent out bedrooms to people who want to come here in the summertime and enjoy the river. And while I'm trying to sit on my screen porch, you know, sort of peacefully enjoying nature, all of a sudden there's lots of activity and noise, and I can't really enjoy my surroundings. And I think for cities like Portsmouth, you know, that very much want to preserve the integrity of neighborhoods, I think that's possibly the number one issue. And so I could see all of a sudden not being able to enjoy my house, and then the next thing you know, the assessor comes around and says, oh, well, you know, you have a commercial business, you should pay more in property tax because that's only fair. You know, we're going to assess your house at the highest and best use. And I'm sitting here in the middle going, well, I don't want to rent out my house. And the assessor says, well, you could, and so we're going to raise your property taxes as well. And so I think it's those kinds of scary ideas related to the quality of life and how it might impact a particular individual that has people concerned.
Well, let's take another call again from Portsmouth. So this seems to be where this is really perhaps one of the hotter issues, maybe less of an issue where there's more space, people more spread out. Linda's joining us from Portsmouth. Hi, Linda. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
So just to address that quick issue about quality of life, you can never guarantee who your neighbor is going to be. So you could buy a house and then 5 years later it gets sold and you get someone else who moves in that you don't find, you know, desirable. But I guess my main point is that I really think that this sharing economy is something that is a rising tide that lifts all boats. I've probably stayed in 6 Airbnbs, Oregon, New York State, New York City, Maine. And the one that we did in Kennebunkport, I would say, was the one that really, that's where I saw that niche get filled. There was a wedding. It was the off season. All of the hotels had closed. The ones that were open had already filled up completely. And so we would have either had an hour and a half drive from the wedding reception, and we were able to find an Airbnb and rent it out. And And had we not been able to do that, then do you even go to weddings? I mean, it's really filling this niche. It's just because something is not operating between, you know, Memorial Day to Labor Day, doesn't mean that you don't get to do something. And I also think it's interesting that if you're already paying, if you do pay taxes on it, then you should be able to do it. If you have a freelance business in your home, you pay taxes. So if you choose to be someone who's involved in Airbnb, then you should be able to go for it. And
well, Linda, thank you for calling in. And, you know, Allison, I did want to ask you, she said a rising tide lifts all boats. From a pure economic standpoint, what has this meant for Airbnb hosts, the people involved in this? I mean, some people, as Linda said, are going for it and doing really well.
It's a good question. The main thing that people wonder about Airbnb is how the distribution breaks down between it helping sort of your typical American and helping people who already have more wealth and more assets. So Airbnb has a lot of data on basically what they call their median host, which is like the person right in the middle, and what they make. And it's usually, depending on the city, it ranges. It's like a couple $100s a year, or in New York, a couple $1,000s a year. But then you have other statistics. So again, to take New York City as an example, there was a big study in October 2014 from the Attorney General's office that was very concerned with what it called commercial users. So these were people who had a lot of properties on Airbnb, were sort of renting them out in mass scale, like really running operations. And according to this report, the top 12 commercial users worked all together. They had almost 15,000 private rentals. They made more than $24 million, and that was 5% of all the revenue that everyone in the city was making off Airbnb. So that suggested something kind of uneven about it.
I see. So that sort of nice picture of, again, you know, the mom and dad renting out the room of the college student, it's that, but a lot more, Allison.
Exactly. And it's hard to know because, you know, Airbnb is so big. There are so many listings. Everything is changing all the time. So you sort of have to take the company at its word on it. Or in the case of New York, the Attorney General subpoenaed them to get access to their data.
What do you think about this from an economic perspective? Again, Professor Nyman, the idea that, you know, they're the small players who are sort of your friendly mom and pop, and then there are big guys who are buying up a lot of property and making a lot of money and maybe not abiding by the same rules and regulations and taxation systems that hotels do.
Right, and so they're able to sort of skirt a number of normal business costs, which sort of gives them a competitive advantage, some might say an unfair advantage. But, you know, I also want to go back to the caller's point, a rising tide lifts all boats, and think about all of the supporting industries that benefit. So if Airbnb makes it possible for people to take a vacation where they otherwise couldn't afford to do it, and more tourists come to New Hampshire, then that's going to benefit all of the restaurants, it's going to benefit all of the tourist attractions, it's going to benefit local shopkeepers who sell sort of those cute little items. And so Airbnb has the potential of actually creating a ripple effect that goes through the entire New Hampshire economy. So anything that sort of increases the amount of tourism is going to benefit, you know, wide portions of the state. And from that perspective, it's a good thing.
So a rising tide lifts all boats. In other words, more economic activity created by people coming in. Allison used the example of, or our caller Linda used the example of, not being able to go to a wedding, except she did find a place to go. A couple emails have come in. Rob says he's a big fan of these person-to-person rental properties over the mega hotels and resorts. He likes Home Away. We also heard from Hannah in Thornton. She hosts Airbnb at her home in the White Mountains. We'll talk about Uber, the ride-sharing service, in just a moment. Stay with us. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at the emerging sharing economy in New Hampshire, the growth of sharing services like Airbnb, HomeAway. We turn our attention now to a ride-sharing service, Uber being the one that most people have heard of, hugely popular in some cities and making big inroads here in the Granite State. Give us a call, the exchange number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can also find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests for the hour are Bob Sanders, longtime reporter at New Hampshire Business Review. He's been covering the sharing economy a lot lately. Also, Neil Nyman, economics professor at UNH, and Allison Griswold, reporter for Quartz, a digital business news publication from Atlantic Media. She's also done a lot of coverage of the sharing economy. And Allison, as we turn to Uber, I did want to once again just turn to you real quick, describe how Uber works for those who've never seen it or never used it. And by the way, Allison, how popular is it in some parts of the country?
Sure. So Uber is what we call a ride-sharing service, a ride-hailing service. Basically, it's an app. You download it on your phone, and then you open it, you set your location, push a button, and a car shows up to give you a ride. And on the driver's side... Oh, sure.
No, go ahead, Allison. Yeah.
On the driver's side, you sign up, and then as long... With a couple exceptions, but in most of the country, as long as you have a driver's license, you can... go through a background check, get approved, and then you can start driving for Uber and make money on the side that way.
And there's been some question about the background checks and whether it's rigorous enough, Allison, especially since an Uber driver in Kalamazoo, Michigan, not that long ago, killed, I think, six people. And there have been other, you know, allegations of sexual assault and so forth. So just give us a little bit there, Allison, that people are, you know, some people are saying the background check system is not as safe and secure as it could be.
What Uber does for background checks is it's mostly electronic, and they run the people through databases. In a lot of cities, there is a strong belief that people should be background checked via fingerprinting because it accesses certain, basically it calls up certain databases that the kind Uber does not do. Uber believes that fingerprinting is discriminatory. In terms of business, they probably wouldn't say this, but one of the concerns is that it's just there's more friction to a fingerprinting background check process. So if you're Uber and you're thinking, how can I grow my business as fast as possible, you want it to be really, really easy for someone to sign up as a driver. And if they have to get fingerprinted, it takes more time, it can be more expensive, it's more prohibitive. So Uber does not like that.
Well, one more question for you, Allison, on this, and then I do want to hear from Bob and Neil. You've written, though, Allison, it's really interesting that although Uber and Airbnb, which we talked about earlier, are often lumped together when people write articles and so forth about the sharing economy, you've said, Allison, there are a lot of differences between these two services. What are the most important differences in your mind?
Well, like I was saying earlier, it's sort of that labor-capital divide. Right, so you have the Airbnbs of the world, which is you have your home, you're going away for a week, you want to rent out your home so you can make some money and your home can be in use while you're not there. And that's a capital platform. And then Uber is maybe you have a part-time job or you're a school teacher, you know, you're not going to work for the summer, and you can sign up for Uber and you can spend 10 hours a week, 15 hours a week, transporting people around the city and making money that way. So what you're dealing with there is your labor, your time.
Professor Nyman, did you want to jump in on that point, too, that one is about using the capital that you have, making a little money while you're gone. You don't have to work for that money. The other is people who maybe don't make enough money with their regular jobs and have to kind of scramble with Uber.
Yeah, well, and one of the big concerns right now is Uber exploiting these drivers. Right, so you've got individuals who are taking advantage of an asset, but in this case, it's an automobile that they're rapidly using up as they put more miles on it, as opposed to somebody stays in my home for a week. Well, the walls are still there, the floor is still there, and the house is still in good shape. But more importantly, their time. And so where the driver is supplying the car, their time, the insurance, they're buying the gasoline, it can create a situation where the driver, you know, doesn't make back the costs of a night transporting people back and forth. And so one of the issues right now is, are these Uber drivers employees or are they just independent contractors? And I think
We're waiting to see clarity in terms of labor laws, because that's ultimately going to determine the future of Uber.
Well, and Bob Sanders, Uber has faced some controversy here in New Hampshire. There was a bill discussed just last week in the New Hampshire State Senate that you covered. What are some of the issues around Uber here in the Granite State?
Yeah, well, unlike Airbnb, which has been basically absent during the whole debates, Uber came in and basically said, this is the bill we'd like you to pass.
So the company Airbnb didn't send any representatives to the legislature to testify.
Right. And even HomeAway came in at the very last moment. Uber has a bill that, they're supporting a bill. And let's say they helped it along somewhat. And it basically has a lot of things that they would like that would override local regulations. But they're saying regulate us. But we are statewide. And in some cases, they have a point because they don't operate in a single municipality. They go across municipal lines all the time. But anyhow, it's locally, there's been regulations passed.
Cities like Portsmouth
again.
Manchester
are two examples. I think Nashua is thinking, or I don't know where they are, but there's so they're dealing with all these local fights, so the statewide thing would help them. And there's a bill passed, I think Don is going to talk about, Senator Donna Soucy, about the regulations. But one thing I wanted to just add, and another big difference is that Airbnb, you set your own rates. In Uber, you do have your own time. You can drive whenever you want. So you say you're an independent contractor, but you don't set your own rates. They set your rates. And just recently, they cut their rates in New Hampshire by about, I think the drivers say about 30%.
Wow,
and
that's a lot.
They are PO'd. And I got on their website, and they're saying, how are we going to make a living doing this? And this is crazy and so forth. But the thing is, they are trying to make a living doing this. I don't think too many people are making a living doing Airbnb. They may be making profits.
They're supplementing their income.
They're supplementing or they're there. But there are people who are hoping to make a living or at least make more than minimum wage doing this. And they are struggling. And this is another the dark side of the sharing economy is can people make a living doing this? And are you basically driving down wages? I mean, cab drivers don't make a lot of money, but you might say they make enough to live on. Is this going to be the same with Uber drivers?
Well, since you mentioned Senator Soucy, joining us now on the line is Donna Soucy, Democratic State Senator from Manchester. She sponsored a bill that would set up, as you said, Bob, statewide regulations for transportation network companies like Uber. And Senator Soucy, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, why did you feel this bill was needed?
This bill was the result of a study committee that I had chaired last year to look at the whole issue of ride sharing. We spent a great deal of time over the summer meeting with Department of Safety, Department of Insurance, taxi cab drivers, obviously representatives of Uber, and welcomed testimony from anyone regarding this whole new ride sharing entity that is coming into our state. And it seems as though there has been a problem for municipalities to try to regulate these entities. It doesn't fit in the typical ordinance structure that you have for taxi cabs. So we thought that it would be important to try to create a statewide regulatory structure so that to the extent ride sharing exists, there are some controls in place.
So how much was this a compromise for you, Senator Soucy? Because some people are saying that Uber gets pretty much everything it wants from this bill.
That's not the case. Certainly they did participate. They've offered a lot of suggestions based on language that has been introduced in other states. I do think that they want to be regulated. They want to have a presence in this state. But there were some concerns expressed along the way from credit unions and banks about notifying lien holders. There were concerns expressed about employee classification, and those changes were made in the legislation. Maybe not exactly the way Uber would have liked, but the way we as legislators thought was appropriate.
Well, it's great that we have you on the line, Senator Soucy, because an email just came in from Tom in Exeter. He says, I like the concept of Uber and Lyft, but I don't think it's right that they can operate for free in an area where taxis are required to buy medallions. Medallions cost taxi companies hundreds of thousands in large cities, around $1 million. Tom, our emailer, says it just doesn't seem fair. So he says, if Lyft or Uber are allowed to operate in an area, shouldn't the Uber or Lyft drivers have to pay something, or shouldn't the taxi companies be compensated for the huge disadvantage? Tom, thank you for the email. What do you think, Senator Susi? This is the point that a lot of taxi companies have made.
Absolutely, a point very well made. The legislation that we had originally drafted called for a $5,000 fee for any ride-sharing entity to be licensed by the Department of Safety. That fee did get reduced in the House. In the Senate, I think we might try to come up with sliding scale. But with respect to the taxi cabs in particular, one of the things we were very, very concerned with, obviously, was competition and forcing taxi cab companies that pay a lot of municipal fees potentially out of business. So one of our recommendations, actually our first recommendation, is that we believe a lot of the taxi cab ordinances that exist throughout New Hampshire in our large cities are very antiquated and are overly burdensome to taxi cab drivers. They cost too much. And to the extent we want to create more of a level playing field, I would hope that our municipalities would start to look at the extent to which they regulate taxi cab companies. Ride sharing and taxi cabs are similar, but they're not exactly the same. And both can coexist, but both should bear both should pay something for the privilege of operating within the state of New Hampshire.
Okay. Well, Senator Susi, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
You bet.
Again, that's Senator Donna Susi, a state senator from Manchester. She's a Democrat, and she has been looking at some of the regulations, both local and statewide, for transportation network companies like Uber. Again, the exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Will joins us from Nashua. Hi, Will. Go ahead. You're in the air.
Yeah, good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Can hear you okay, Will. Yep, go ahead.
Good, okay. Well, you know, I think the Uber was a great idea, and I thought to myself, well, I can sort of, you know, it's a good way of earning some extra money. But I called my insurance company and asked them about that because I thought, you know, see what they say. And they said, well, to be quite honest with you, keep clear of them because, you know, we wouldn't touch them with a barge pole. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, in order to sort of carry passengers, you've got to really have commercial insurance. We don't provide you with commercial insurance. Most of the, you know, the cars that are on the road are insured for private use only, and that precludes for hire, you know, because it sort of gets in the face of the taxi cab companies, which you've already addressed. So that's, I see, that's sort of unfair, but you can understand why it is so. And they just advised me, they said, you know, even though Uber say, oh, yeah, we'll cover you for $1 million, they said, wait till you have an accident and try and claim it from them and see what they do. They said,
wow, okay. Yeah, Will, thank you for calling in. This is real interesting, and it gets to some of these issues that don't get explored as much. Bob Sanders, to you first. So here's Will. He says, hey, why not? Make a couple extra bucks. But his insurance company said, you're going to have to buy commercial insurance for your car if you start carrying people around for Uber.
Not really, if the state regs get passed. So that's a big issue. The bill would basically allow for the kind of insurance that Uber wants, which is a kind of flexible insurance, so that it only – it's a commercial insurance when your app's on, and it's off when your app's off. So your regular insurance, when you're not looking around trying to find somebody, then you pay a certain rate. And then when you have someone in your car, that's another level of insurance. So this kind of flexible insurance is what Uber wants and what Uber gets in this bill. But in local regulations, they're saying you need commercial insurance. Well, it depends on some local. I can't keep track of all of them, but some of them are saying that, and that's a big issue. And the other issue that is in that bill is the independent contractor issue, which we discussed before. And that's, are you a worker or are you an independent contractor? Uber wants in the legislation that you're an independent contractor, and they define it in the bill. The state has its own definition. And so that, as Donna said, that was taken out That was basically something that Uber wanted and didn't get. Basically, they want to make it clear that these people are independent contractors. You don't have to make the minimum wage. They don't have to get any benefits. And they would like that in the state legislation. They're fighting that legally in the courts.
Well, Allison, and to the idea that we heard about from Senator Susi that, you know, some cities in New Hampshire want to come up with their own regulations and their own requirements. Uber obviously would prefer statewide regulations, so it doesn't have to mess around with, you know, 30 different sets of regulations. How is that being sorted out elsewhere, Allison?
Yeah, I just think it's helpful to broaden this out beyond New Hampshire, because the big picture is that throughout 2015, Uber marched across the country. They got regulations that they basically wrote, passed in 22 different states that legitimized their business, allowed them to operate exactly the way they wanted. In many of those states, they built in provisions that, like you've been talking about, said the people who drive for them are independent contractors. Meanwhile, that's been a tremendous issue in the legal system. Uber just agreed to pay $100 million to settle a major class action lawsuit on that point in California. So you have all these things going on. And the classic thing about Uber is that they will sort of be the nice guy in the city or the state until people start to go against them. And then they pull all the stops. So in New York, they sort of came down very hard on Mayor Bill de Blasio when he tried to cap the service. In San Antonio, they threatened to leave. They threw a huge fit. And they just do this in city after city to get what they want.
Well, and Professor Nyman, I'll give you the last word here on sort of the economics of Uber and how it's disrupting not just for taxi companies or traditional limos, but for labor markets as well. What do you think, Professor Nyman?
Well, the principal challenge for Uber is they want to have it both ways. They want to consider everybody an independent contractor, but they want to have all of those independent contractors charge the same price, which goes against federal antitrust legislation. So you can't, on the one hand, say that each is independent, on the other hand, engage in price-fixing behavior. And I think ultimately that will determine the future of Uber.
All right. Well, all of you, thank you so much. Professor Nyman, good to have you back. Thank you.
Sure. My pleasure.
That's Professor Neil Nyman. He's an economics professor at UNH. Allison Griswold, it was great to have you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Allison Griswold, reporter for Quartz, a digital business news publication from Atlantic Media. And Bob Sanders, it was good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Bob Sanders, longtime reporter at New Hampshire Business Review. This is The Exchange on NHPR.